मोकम करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरिं यत्कृपातं वंदे श्रीगुरुदीनतारिणीं परमानंद माधवं श्रीचैतन्य ईश्वरम्। ओके सो आई रिक्वेस्ट एवरीवन टू प्लीज पोस्ट इन द ग्रुप व्हाट एवर यू रिमेंबर फ्रॉम द लास्ट फोर सेशंस दैट वी हैड, सेशन वन टू देन सेशन थ्री पार्ट वन एंड सेशन थ्री पार्ट टू। प्लीज गो अहेड। So what did we learn in session one? Can we have a small recap? Okay, we learned about the four needs. Yes. So physical need, then psychological need, emotional need, and spiritual need. Yes. And then we also said that it's very, very important to make sure that our spiritual needs are fulfilled. And when we do that, other three needs, they'll also be taken care of because the person will be satisfied within. And that's what we are missing as of now. And then in the second session, what did we see in the second session? We saw the signs of victory. So what were the signs of victory on the side of Arjuna? The holy place. Then Krishna, Hanuman on the flag, and the goddess of fortune. Yes, correct. So now, in that particular session, we saw there are two types of mentality, Duryodhana mentality and Arjuna mentality. So Duryodhana mentality is all about taking Narayani and not accepting Narayani. And when it comes to Arjuna mentality, it is accepting Krishna, accepting Narayani, and automatically the opponents will come, right? And we saw a very important shloka. We said, wherever there is Krishna and wherever there is Arjuna, there are three things in that particular place. What are those three things? Sorry, four aspects. What are those four aspects? First, opulence, correct. Second, victory. Third, extraordinary power. And fourth is morality. Absolutely correct, Jay. Very happy to hear. Sorry, very happy to read, you know, these answers here. And then we also said in the third session that our sufferings are because of, you know, various different things. And one of the important thing when it comes to suffering is, what did we discuss? Attachment to temporary things. Absolutely correct. And in the last session, last to last session, we saw that we are this body and not spirit soul. Correct, right? We are this body, not spirit soul. Am I correct? Oh, okay. You're saying no. Then what is the answer then? What are we? We are spirit soul. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, we are spirit soul. And last time we made a statement, we said that we are not human beings with spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings with human experience. So this is what we said, you know, last time. So, okay, just a minute. I think. Yes. Okay. And then, which were the different topics that we learned in the last session? Comparison, okay, disease of comparison. And then what else? So when it comes to disease of comparison, what were the solutions that we gave for disease of comparison? Okay, job satisfaction. But then, what were the things? First, do your own duty, correct? Second, work according to capacity. Third, what's the third one? Don't aspire to do others' duty, correct? Fourth, don't impress others. We work for what? We work for mind satisfaction. And finally, the fifth one. What was the fifth one? What was the fifth one? Be satisfied with whatever results you get. Absolutely correct. Yes, absolutely correct. So these were the different things that we learned. And then we also saw that diagram wherein we saw the flow chart. Dhyato vishayan pumsah sangasteshu upajayate sangat sanjayate kamah kamat krodho vijayate. So in that particular session, that particular section, we saw that why a person commits wrong acts. First thing that happens is, no, he starts meditating on sense objects. Correct. Oh, your Pritha is giving a lot of this one. Sense object, then yes, attachment. Then the person gets that lust, the desire. And if the desire is not fulfilled, then finally anger. And the person gets very, very angry. So in this way, we see that the person gets angry, but after getting angry, what happens? After getting angry, the person gets bewildered. Yes. Then, after bewilderment, what happens? Loss of intelligence. And after loss of intelligence, when the person is completely deluded, he will commit wrong acts. And we saw so many of them. We saw so many of them, right? Now, in today's session, we're going to discuss some of the very, very important things. In fact, I would say that anyone who understands today's session and the next session on next Sunday will be able to answer most of the questions in life. Most of the questions in life. Because the topic of karma, the mystery of karma itself is very, very important not to understand. Anyone who understands this mystery of karma, that person will be able to answer various questions, which are very much implicit. It just happens. It just happens. And it becomes very difficult for a person to understand why is it happening. Right? So this particular thing, we'll try to understand in this session. So this session will basically be a very important prerequisite. And the next session, we'll be answering various questions like, why do bad things happen to good people? Why these various things are happening in my own life? And most of the time, people have this question. That person is so bad, but still, why is that person having a nice time in his life? So these are the different questions which we'll try to answer. Okay, so let's start with today's session with the chanting of the shloka. In fact, I would like to congratulate all of you all in this month of Purushottam, a very, very auspicious month which comes in once in 2.5 to 3 years. We all have come together. Now I can see a number 488. Yes, I've changed the place for today, and I never expected the sound will resound here in this particular place. So, is it very bad? You're not able to hear at all? Like, is it possible to bear with me first? Okay, it's okay. Echoing little. We can adjust. Okay, please adjust. Because there was some internet problem in the previous venue, so I have to change the venue now. So I've come to a different place. Okay. Let's start. Let's not spend time in this. Yeah, so I was saying that in this auspicious month of Purushottam, we all are getting this opportunity to come together and discuss Bhagavad Gita. It's a very, very rare opportunity. I'm sure maybe most of you might not be able to understand also what I'm saying. But then, with time, when you spend more time in Krishna consciousness practicing bhakti, you realize that what you got in this Purushottam was really the topmost, really the topmost. Yes. So, keeping this in the mind, I would request everyone that please be attentive for next 1 hour 15 minutes. It's just 1 hour 15 minutes. Just try to focus. Tell your mind to forget everything else and just try to focus on this. The topic that we're discussing is extremely important, extremely important. Keep all your work aside for next 1 hour 15 minutes and let's focus on this wonderful topic of karma. Let me share my screen and let's start discussing about various aspects now. So we're discussing from Bhagavad Gita and we dedicate this presentation to A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, because of whom we are able to understand these intricacies of karma, or else it would have been very, very difficult not to understand why things are happening, what is basically the solution, and how can I get rid of it. It's because of him that we have got this opportunity to understand what is karma. And obviously, once we understand karma, we'll learn the art of work. So let's start with this question. Which one is better, work or renunciation? Let's chant the shloka. I request everyone to repeat after me. Arjuna vacha. Jayasi chet karmanaste. Mata buddhir janardhana. Tatkim karmani ghore ma. Niyoja esi keshava. Now, Arjuna's situation, you know, is this. He's very much confused. He's not understanding what to do. He's asking Krishna, Krishna, you tell me one thing. Don't confuse me now. And what is that one thing? Should I work or should I renounce? What should I do? What is the important thing that should I do? Oh, Krishna, please tell me. Now, this is the question that he's posting forward. Arjuna is seeing all his relatives standing in front of him. And he's not understanding what to do. Ideally, he should fight because it's a dharma and adharma war that will be going on. But then, looking at all the relatives, this person is completely bewildered. And then, he's asking this question to Krishna. So in the second chapter, Krishna will describe body, soul concept and so many other concepts. And in the third chapter, first shloka, Arjuna is asking, please tell me, what should I do? In the second chapter, we have explained that renunciation is good. And now towards the end, you're saying work. What should I do? Should I renounce or should I work? So Arjuna, to be very frank, is frustrated somewhat. And out of frustration, looking at all his relatives standing opposite to him for fighting, he's going crazy. And then he's asking this question, oh Krishna, please tell me, what should I do? In fact, he's telling that, oh Krishna, I don't want to fight. If you allow, I just want to go to forest. I just want to renounce everything. I just want to renounce everything. Let me check if I can take the poll. Okay. So how many of us have got this feeling? The feeling is, enough is enough. I want to leave everything and become a sannyasi. How many of us have got this feeling? I'm launching a poll. So there are four options. I feel this all the time. Yes, I get this feeling sometimes. I don't get this feeling at all. And no comments. So these are the four options. I launched the poll here. Yes, please go ahead and answer this question. How many of us have this feeling? Enough is enough. I just want to leave everything and become a sannyasi. Yes, all the 525 people, please go ahead and answer this question. Okay, yes, I get this feeling sometimes. 200 plus people are saying this. I feel this all the time, 65 people are saying. And there are some people are smiling and saying no comments. And there are a few, 93 people that are saying, I don't get this feeling at all. Oh, okay. I end the poll here. And these are the results. Yes, I get this feeling sometimes. And I get this feeling all the time. So there are 65 people saying that. So see, when it comes to renunciation, let's try to understand about renunciation. Let me share the screen. See. So now renunciation can be due to problems artificially. And people have this. Let me give up all these things and become a sannyasi. In fact, I would like to spend some time on this topic now because many, many people have this doubt. So sometimes, people feel, especially married couple, either of them will come. At least in last few years, the Gita course that I'm taking, at least few couples will come and say this, either the husband or the wife. Prabhuji, is enough. Enough is enough. I cannot bear with this. I cannot, I cannot stay with this lady or I cannot stay with this man. Enough, enough. Prabhuji, please, with your permission, I would like to give up everything and join ashram. Can you please help? This is one case. Second, sometimes the Matajis would come, the wives would come and they would say this, Prabhuji, my husband is doing too much of bhakti, Prabhu. Please tell me, what to do. I fear that this person, will go away, leave the house and go away. I ask this question to everyone. How many of you feel this, that when you practice more bhakti, you leave the house and go away? Please raise your hand in the chat box. In that participants tab, you will get that option of raise hands. Please raise hands. How many are saying this? Okay. There's so many who are raising their hands. I can see that. Okay. So many, many people have this question. If I practice bhakti, will I become a sannyasi? See, one thing all of us have to understand is taking sannyas is not like, someone has given you a plate of halwa and you have started eating it. It is not that easy. Taking sannyas is not eating halwa. Taking sannyas is a very, very serious job, a serious business. And it is not meant for everyone. Not meant for everyone. So human life, suppose a person lives for 100 years. Our Vedic scriptures recommend that for first 25 years, the person should remain a brahmachari, a bachelor. For next 25 years, the person should marry, remain a grihastha. And then after that, for next 25 years, the person should take vanaprastha. That is, at the age of 50, the person should leave the house with the wife and go for tirthayatra. So in Hindi, we say ekyavan, bhavan, trepan, and so on. Right? Ekyavan. So their one actually stands for forest. So it's very clear that when a person crosses 50, the person should go to forest. Should go for tirthayatra. And at the age of 75, a person is still alive, then yes, the person can take sannyas, leave the family, and just do bhajan. Just take up the monkhood or renunciation. Now, when it comes to bachelors, the ones who are not married, they have the option. They can either choose to get married or they can be a renunciant, remain a monk, remain a bachelor throughout their life. But once when a person gets married, he has to take care of the family. There is no question of leaving the family. I hope all the married ones who are listening to me, all the 550 people who have assembled today for this session, this is a very, very important thing. If you are a married person, you cannot give up your family. You cannot. That is actually an aparad. That is not a proper thing. That is not an etiquette. Lord will surely not be happy, with this particular thing. So when a person is married, he has to take care of the family. He has to take care of the wife. He has to take care of the kids. And the female also, she has to take care of the husband. She has to take care of the kids. There is no option of leaving. There's no option of leaving the family. So when it comes to bhakti, we can dip ourselves as much as possible. Why to worry about, if I do more bhakti, I'll become a renunciant. Nothing like that. Even if you want to become a renunciant, who will take you? Who will take you? If you want to become a renunciant, you have to come to me, right? Since you've accepted me as your guide, you have to come to me. And obviously, I will not give permission, right? Because it's against the rule. Obviously, the ones who are bachelors, they have this option to choose either to get married or to remain a monk. And the ones who are married, they have to make sure that they take care of the family. Sometimes, some parents are so foolish, they don't understand what the child is doing outside. I have this experience, with various of my students from college. So when they start practicing bhakti, parents are worried. Parents think, my only son will become a sannyasi. But you know what your son is doing in the college? So when I was back in Bitspilani doing my M.Tech, so in my hostel room, I would take sessions. So the hostel room, around 20 people would come every evening and morning also. And then I would give class. So whatever class I'm giving here, same I would give in my room there. So many of my classmates would come. Many of the bachelor students would come to attend. So like this, we had a crowd of 20 would come. So one boy who was addicted to alcohol, addicted to watching nonsense on internet, addicted to or sort of woman mongler, playboy types. So that boy, he started coming to my sessions. And then after going home for vacation and coming back, he started telling that, Prabhu, my mother was telling that, don't practice much bhakti, you'll become a sannyasi. Then I told him, give number of your mother, I'll talk to her. I'll give her assurance that you can never ever become a sannyasi, don't worry. Come on, some purity is needed, right? We cannot just become a sannyasi just like that. But unfortunately, don't know why, but in India, in general, people feel that if a person starts practicing bhakti, that person will become a sannyasi, that person will give up the family. At least for men, yes, they can take sannyas, but for females, it is not allowed at all. It is not allowed for Matajis, to take sannyas. So when they are young, when they are unmarried, they are under the care of father. When they are married, they are under the care of husband. When the husband takes sannyas, they are under the care of their elder son. So never ever they have this opportunity, or I would say a chance of becoming a sannyasi. So there is no question of females becoming sannyasi. So that should be removed. Now, if you ask this question, why probably what offense we have done? I don't know. Shastra say. Obviously, due to various reasons, because it is very much necessary that females are the most important members of the society, and they have to be protected very nicely. Because they are the ones who nurture the entire family. They are the ones who take the family on the right path. If something happens to them, then who will take care of the family? Who will take care of the society? So that is one of the reasons that females are not left alone. Sannyasi means you have to go around alone. You cannot be just like that. So in this way, we understand there is no question of worry at all. Everyone can practice bhakti. Now, even if suppose you have this question, that no, my son is very pure. No, I am sure he doesn't do anything nonsense, Prabhuji. So I'm sure he is very pure. So what if he becomes a sannyasi? Especially when it comes, there are rumors all around the world about ISKCON, that in ISKCON, people make sannyasis, people make brahmacharis. And there were lots of videos, lots of rumors were there last year. Lots of rumors were there. But then let me tell you something internal. Now, since all of you know me and we have been spending a lot of time together, let me tell you something internal of ISKCON. So when it comes to accepting someone as a renunciant in the organization, there are lots of exams, there are lots of interviews, and the character of the person is tested. He's under observation for more than 3 years. And then when he passes the test, when he proves that he's eligible to be a renunciant, then that person is accepted. And we are very, very particular about this, very particular. We don't accept anyone and everyone. If anyone and everyone starts coming to the temple, then we'll have a tough time managing them, isn't it? Just imagine a person who is very lusty comes inside the temple and wearing saffron robes. And then any female who comes in the temple, he'll just keep scanning that female from top to bottom. All right? So we cannot take such chance. So when it comes to accepting people as renunciants, that also has strict rules. It's not that, oh, I have got this intense desire, I'm doing bhakti nicely, so I want to become a renunciant. No. And there should be sanction of the Lord also. So the point that I'm trying to make is that we cannot renounce just because there are problems in life. There's a higher calling when it comes to renunciation. There's a higher calling when it comes to becoming a sannyasi. So it's not meant for everyone. Monks and sannyasis are like the soldiers on the border. So why there are soldiers on the border? So that they can protect the citizens inside the country, correct? So suppose everyone goes to the border, then what is the use of that? What is the use of that? So there are only few who will be on the border. So these sannyasis are like those few who are the soldiers trying to protect the culture, the wisdom of all these scriptures by spreading the message of Bhagavad Gita and so many other things, right? So there is no question of fear. And there is no question of renunciation when it comes to problems. This first thing, whenever there are problems, people start thinking, oh, I should give up. Enough is enough. I cannot. I cannot. Now, the next thing is, oh, it's too much in my life. Let me quit my body. Let me quit my body. Enough is enough. How much will I bear these problems of life? How much? I'll just give up my body. I'll commit suicide. All the ones who have attended my session, last to last session, when we were discussing about reincarnation, near-death experience, and also the ones who have attended the Thursday Q&A session. If you remember, we had discussed about the concept of ghost. So when a person commits suicide, there is no question of he getting that opportunity of rest in peace. This RIP is just illusion. We are talking about Bhagavad Gita now. There is nothing called as RIP, rest in peace. There is nothing called a rest in peace. Because a soul from one body has to get transferred to another body. And if the person has committed suicide, he has to become a ghost. And the ghostly body, that is a subtle body, it doesn't have any opportunity to access the gross material things, that is food, water, and other things. And that punishment that the soul gets is terrible, very, very terrible, right? So in this way, we understand that when the person says, enough of problems, I want to commit suicide, there is no question of committing suicide. There's no question of committing suicide. And if he commits a suicide, he'll suffer more. He'll suffer more. Another reason which people give for renunciation is this. Okay, so now I don't want to do any work. Let me not do anything. I'll just sit like that. I don't want to do anything. Aram se baith. Kuch mat karo. But if you just sit like that, what are the problems? Body will go for a toss. It will become lethargic. The person will become lazy. There'll be a lot of bodily ailments. There'll be so many problems. So many problems, right? So in this way, the point is that there's no question of inaction. So person has to work. The person has to work. And when it comes to renunciation also, our renunciation is like this. Many, many people, renounce for a few days. Our renunciation is like this. So the person eats a lot and then finally he's like, oh, enough. Abhi dieting karenge, abhi bahut ho gaya abhi. Enough. Many of the times people slog like anything in their office and then they want to take a break. Oh, let me take a break. When they're working in the office, they feel, oh, I need some break. And then when they go for a break for vacation, they start thinking, oh, this work has to be done, that work has to be done. This is our renunciation. When we get completely frustrated with one activity, we want to just give up for some time. That is what is a renunciation as of now for us. And this is called as bhoga and tyaga. All the ones who have tried dieting, I'm sure you might have experienced bhoga. After eating a lot, the person realizes, oh, and then tyaga, enough, enough is enough. I don't want to get in this particular activity again. So this is bhoga, tyaga. It's a pendulum. To the extreme, bhoga, tyaga. And this doesn't work. This doesn't work when it comes to renunciation. Yes. In fact, Krishna says in one of the shlokas in Bhagavad Gita, he says that we cannot renounce like this. And what will happen when we renounce? This is what happens. Please repeat after me. Karmendriyani sammanya ya aste manasasmaran indriyarthan vimodhatma mithyachara sa uchyate. So if someone, suppose, even after telling all these things, if someone renounces, what will happen? What will happen? Externally, he's a renunciant. But internally, the person is a bhogi. It's like, din mein sanyasi, raat mein vilasi. This is what is the mood of the person. In the morning time, she's acting like a sannyasi. At night time, everything. He'll have some females also. He'll have some intoxication also and things like that. So when it comes to renunciation, either it will be bhoga tyaga or it will be pretension. We'll just be like pretenders. Externally, we'll try to become like a sannyasi, but internally, we are more than any other bhogi, any other sense gratifier. Right? And this is what Arjuna also did. Arjuna gave two reasons, there are four reasons, and out of the two first reasons were, I cannot kill my own people. I cannot kill my own people, O Krishna. And the second thing that he said was, if all of them are killed, how will I enjoy? So, tyaga and bhoga. Again, when it comes to Arjuna's case, he also did the same. Bhoga and tyaga. So that is the reason Krishna is very clearly mentioning that giving up work is not a solution. We cannot give up work. We have to work. But now the question is, how to work? What sort of work? This is the question. What sort of work are we supposed to do? So I'm displaying some pictures on the screen, and you have to tell me which one is good and which one is bad. So case one, you can see a picture of gun. Okay. So I'm launching a poll here. Tell me, is it a good activity or bad activity? Yes, please go ahead, everyone. Gun shooting. Bad, bad. Yes, bad. 100 plus people are saying bad activity. Like 250 people are saying bad activity. Yes, I want all the 570 people to answer. Please go ahead. All the 570 people. Please participate. Okay, 134 people are confused. They're saying not sure. There are 300 plus people saying it's bad activity. Okay, 30 seconds done. I end the poll here. Okay, I see majority of the crowd saying bad activity. Okay, we'll discuss this. So this is the results. Now, there's another question. Now, this picture which you can see, where the person is beating another person. One person beating another person. Okay, I'm launching a poll again. And tell me, case two, is it a good activity or bad activity? Fast, everyone, all 570 people, please go ahead. Is it a good activity or bad activity? You might be saying, Takulu, what are you asking? See, this is a trivial question. Do you think you're mad people? No, there is a very, very important concept that I'm trying to get here by these questions. Yes, last 5 seconds. Okay, there are some 350 people saying that it's a bad activity. Yes, 343 people saying it's bad activity. 10 people are saying good activity. And 112 people are saying not sure. Okay. Okay, let's analyze. Now, okay, there are case 3 and case 4. Telling truth, always being truthful. Is it a good activity or bad activity? Is it a good action or bad action? Please go ahead and answer this question, everyone. Good activity, bad activity. Telling truth, is it good or bad? Telling truth, is it good or bad? All 575 participants, please go ahead and answer this question. Okay, last 10 seconds. So I see there are 360 plus people saying it's a good activity and the number is increasing. Okay. Okay, I end the poll here. 376 participants are saying it's a good activity. Okay. Okay. Now, charity. Case number 4 and the last case for today. Charity, is it a good activity or a bad activity? Please go ahead and answer this question. Here I launch the poll. Is it a good action or bad action? Charity. Giving charity. There are a few people still saying not sure. No, I want to talk to them. Not sure people. And there are 400 people saying it's good action. Okay. Out of 571, 420 people are saying it's a good action. Oh, I end the poll here. 424 people have said it's a good action. Okay. Now, let me put a googly. Okay, these are the results. Okay. Let's go back to the first case one and case two and discuss. Shooting. Now, majority of you said shooting is a bad activity. But then, when the soldier is shooting on the border, tell me, is it a good activity or bad activity? Huh? If it's a bad activity, as most of you all said, then why that person gets medals? Why government gives medals to them once they're shooting? And beating, many of you said beating is a bad activity. When a parent, out of concern to correct one's own kid, when the parent beats, it's a bad activity. Obviously, all the kids who are attending my session, they might say it's a bad activity. But Tell me, is it a bad activity? Soldier on the border and parents at home, you know, trying to hit the child. Is it a bad activity? Okay, so it's a googly. What about this truth? I'll give you a scenario. Okay. So a cow is running. A cow is running from the butcher shop. And then you're standing on the road. And the cow from in front of you, it runs to a different direction altogether. The butcher man comes to you. And then he's asking you, Did you see the cow? Did you see the cow? Where did it go? And he's having a big knife in his hand. And you very well understand that he wants to kill the cow. What will you tell? You'll say, no, I am the son of Satya Harishchandra. I have to tell the truth. At that time, surely will not tell the truth, isn't it? And when it comes to charity, most of you all said it's good activity. There are people who give charity to terrorist organization. So is that charity good? Is that charity good? I open the chat box here. I want you all to tell that, can we just see the action and determine, is it good or bad? If not, then on what basis can we decide the activity is good or bad? Please go ahead. The chat box is open. Okay, someone said, depend on situation and circumstance. Purpose of activity. No harm to anyone based on situation. Intention. Okay. Depends on. Oh, life is nothing. Based on situations. Never judge by external thing. Intention is important. It's just a mind game. Purpose is very important. Dharma is very important. Yes. Thank you very much. So now the questions are again, you know, repeating. So the answers are repeating. So yes, one of the important things that we have to understand is, see, when it comes to any action, we cannot just decide, is it good or bad? We cannot decide what is right and what is wrong. It is based on various aspects. Maybe the thing that is good for me might be bad for someone else, and maybe a bad for someone might be good for me. Like, for example, a drunkard, he might be sitting in a bar holding a bottle in the hand, and he would say, yes, this is the good activity, this is the best activity, and everyone in the world should do this. Who is giving this? Now, who is giving the stamp that this is a good activity? So there are two important things that matters when we talk about activities. Is it good or bad? Externally, when we see, it might look good, but there'll be something else in the background. I came across a very nice photo, a very interesting one, maybe a couple of years back. So there was a boy in that photo, in that painting, there was a boy, and there was an old, ugly looking man, and there was a beautiful girl. So old man, beautiful girl, and the boy. So now the boy is looking at the old man and the beautiful girl, and he's thinking. So old man has his hand behind like this, and the girl also has her hand behind like this. And the boy is thinking, oh, this old man, what he might be having in the hand. And he said, he has come to kill me. Look at him. He looks so ugly. Look at him. And then he looks at the girl and says, oh, she's so beautiful. I'm sure she has got a rose to propose me. And then the next photo, no, that was the photo taken from behind the old man and that girl. And that was shown what they had in the hand. Old man had a rose and girl had a big sword to kill the person. So just by seeing people, just by seeing their actions, we cannot determine, is it good or is it bad? Very, very important. This is a very important takeaway. Two important things are very, very important to take care when we determine if the actions are good or bad. First one is intention. What is our intention? When the parent is hitting the kid externally, seeing, no, we might say, oh, it's a bad activity. How arrogant or how ruthless the parent is. He's hitting his own child. Are Baba, what is the intention behind? That is very, very important. Second, situation and circumstance. Very, very important. As most of you have told this answer. Situation and circumstance. When the soldier is shooting on the border, he's doing a service to the country by fighting with the enemy. So it's a good activity. That is the reason, the government is giving them various medals. So depending on intentions and circumstances, situations, we can categorize if the activity is good or bad. This is very, very important. And this is bringing us to a very important topic. To decide what is good, what is bad, what is good activity, what is bad activity, and in the terms of Bhagavad Gita, what is good karma, what is bad karma. So now we are entering the topic of karma, and we're going to see various aspects when it comes to karma. So here we go. The action and reaction, the mystery of karma. So there's a nice video which describes it all, what is karma. So I request everyone to please see this video, a very, very nice and humorous one. So I think it answers it all, right? What's the definition of karma? I want to know from you all, what is the definition of karma according to you? The chat box is open. Please type in. What is the definition of karma according to you? Just now you saw a video. Based on that, you can write. Right deed, my duty. You reap what you, you reap what you sow. Reflection, you get what you do. The deeds we do come back. What goes around comes around. Tit for tat. Action and reaction. Destiny. Reactions to your action. Newton's third law. Boomerang. Okay, boomerang. Yes, it goes and come back again. Yes. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction sent back to you. Okay. Yes, all of you are saying this and repeating this. Same concept that what goes comes back, right? And Newton, he stole this concept from Bhagavad Gita, and he gave it as a third law. What is that? Every action has equal and opposite reaction. Newton's third law of motion. I'm sure all of you have studied this very nicely. Every action has got an equal and opposite reaction. And now, who will get this equal and opposite reaction? This is a question. Responsibility comes when intelligence is developed. A very important statement for today. Very, very important. Very important. Yes, we can stop giving the answers. Yeah, please listen now. We said that responsibility comes with intelligence. So when it comes to karma, we have to understand to whom this karma is applicable. Very, very important question. Please hear very carefully. We are entering a very deep topic now, which is a very important prerequisite to understand various concepts of karma. If you don't understand this particular thing, you'll not understand anything after this. Very important. Please listen this now. So when we talk about intelligence and when we talk about karma, how are these two related? So when it comes to intelligence and karma, they're very much related. A person who has got intelligence, only to that person, karma is applicable. Now this goes on to say, even Shastras say this, the kids who are not mature, the kids who are below 11 years, those kids, no. Nowadays, kids mature very early. I don't know if the definition has to change now for this generation, but then we'll take what is given in Shastra. So, less than 11 years, whose intelligence is not developed, who have not become matured mentally, physically, for them, karma is not applicable. So, suppose even if they lie, even if they steal, do something. So, and also government also considers them as minor, isn't it? Once less than 18 years. And even if they commit some heinous act, still government considers them as minor. And not a big punishment is given to them. So similarly, now the question is, karma acts on animals? Does karma act on animals? Think about it. Again, link the intelligence aspect with the karma aspect, and the answer will be no. Karma does not act on animals. Why? And another important thing is, karma acts on human beings only who have got higher intelligence, who have become matured. Now I'm taking you all to a very important topic, the difference between humans and animals. Till date, anyone who has heard this topic, I've got this feedback all the time that it was a big eye-opener for me, Prabhuji. Thank you very much. This is what is the feedback that I've been getting from last couple of years. So please listen this carefully now. What is the difference between humans and animals? Before that, let me talk about what are the common things between humans and animals. So there are four common things. Eating, we eat, they also eat. Second, sleeping. We sleep, they also sleep. Third, mating or reproduction. So humans also mate, animals also mate. Fourth, defense. So humans also try to protect themselves, and animals also try to defend themselves in various ways. So now the question is that what is the difference between humans and animals? So some of you might say, no, animals eat raw food, I eat pizza, pasta. My spiritual master, he says, pizza, pasta, narak ka rasta. So you might say, no, I eat cooked food. I eat cooked food. They eat raw food. But finally, what are we doing? We're eating for what? Filling the stomach. So the end result will determine what is the activity. So activity is same. Eating activity, which finally accomplishes fulfillment of the hunger or removing the hunger, the pangs of hunger. So eating is same. Sleeping. Now someone might say that no, I sleep in my AC room on curl and bed, nicely with a pillow, and a dog sleeps under a car. But then when we are deep asleep, we don't understand where we are sleeping. Are we sleeping under a car, on the road, on the footpath, or on the bed? Have you seen drunkards just lying there on the road, on the footpath, as if they're taking a nice tight sleep on the road when there's so much of traffic? So when a person is in deep sleep, it hardly matters. So they sleep, we also sleep. The activity is same. Mating activity is same. Defense activity is same. We might have guns. They have their own claws and they have their teeth. So they're finally trying to defend themselves. But now the question is, how are we special as compared to animals? Now, some of you might say, the students might say, Prabhuji, what are you asking? Don't offend us like this. We are struggling hard in these online classes from the schools and colleges. They're trying to teach us something. We don't want to learn, but still we are trying our best. We are studying, Prabhuji, we are studying. How can you say that we are saying? Why are you studying? Why are you studying? And the others who are there, employees, the working, the ones, corporate professionals, you might say that, Prabhuji, we are working. We are working. How can you say that? We are saying like animals. Why are you working? Why are you studying? Finally, for what? The ones who are studying, they want to get a job. The ones who are doing job, after getting a job, what do you want? You want to earn. Why do you want to earn money? So that your basic necessities are fulfilled. And what are those basic necessities? Those basic necessities are eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Simple. Yes? These are the four important activities. And please analyze this. Everyone, please analyze this. All of us just do these four activities. There is nothing apart from these we do. Nothing apart from these, to be very frank. But then, if that is the case, then there's no difference between humans and animals. No difference at all, huh? Then how are we special? If a human being is doing the same activity like animals, he's called as a two-legged animal. Now, Someone might say that no, Prabhuji, animals also have intelligence. It's not just human beings. Animals also have intelligence. Animals also have intelligence. I completely agree. You might say that human beings are better because they have got higher intelligence. But animals also have intelligence. You might have seen, right? Like, for example, a cat. It enters the kitchen. Very, very softly, it will enter the kitchen. And it will drink all the milk there in the kitchen. And softly, it will go out. No one will get to know also. If the cat does not have intelligence, then how will the cat enter the kitchen then? How is it possible? How is it possible? Yes, like this. And have you seen the nest of a bird? Have you seen the nest of a bird? It's engineered a nest. If you just open that, you'll not be able to open it. You'll not be able to tear it so easily. They have intertwined those fibers so nicely. And they don't have hands, just with a beak, they've intertwined all that. And so beautiful. A nest like this, or sometimes the nest is like this with a hole down and a hole in between. Oh, this needs our intelligence. But then when it comes to animals, they use this intelligence for doing only the four activities: eating, sleeping, mating, defending. They're programmed to do that. And when it comes to human beings, if they also use their intelligence only for these four things, come on, then what is the difference between the two? What is the difference between the two? And another important one nice example I would like to give. Like, suppose now one sack of grains is kept on the road. Now the birds will come and they will pick some grains in their mouth, eat, and they'll just fly. A cow will come, eat the grains, and the cow will go away. Human being, what the human being will do? Yes, that's what the same thing what you're thinking. He'll take the entire sack home. Right? So the point is, they are also eating. The human being is also eating, but human being is using his higher intelligence, taking away the sack home, and do what? Again, eating. So the point that I'm trying to put forward today, here in this particular section that we're discussing, is the higher intelligence of human beings, when it is used for lower things like this, only to do these four things: eating, sleeping, mating, defending, a human being is extremely miserable. Extremely miserable. It's like, suppose now we have a Mercedes car. And we use that Mercedes car to plow the field. What will happen to the Mercedes car? The Mercedes car will deteriorate, isn't it? Our body is like the Mercedes car. Animals' body is like the body, like a tractor. So the Mercedes car is used to do the activity of a tractor. What will happen? The Mercedes car will get destroyed, isn't it? Same thing is happening with human beings in general. As of now, the entire society is just doing these four activities: eating, sleeping, mating, defending. How can I eat better? Last year, one case had come to me, and the person was asking, "Prabhuji, I'm not able to control my eating. Whichever restaurant I see, I just go and I just eat. Can you please help?" This was the question. Eating, how can I eat better? How can I sleep better? If you just look around on the roads, the billboards, if you just see the advertisements, it just talks about these four things: how to eat better, how to sleep better, how to mate better, how to defend better, life insurance. Yes, this is how the entire marketing industry is working on these four things. Even the movies talk about these only four things. I don't see anything more than these four things. So the point that I'm trying to put forward is, when the human beings do only these four things, they're miserable, extremely miserable. They have the problems of depression because of this. Second, now have you heard about any animal committing suicide? Humans do. Humans do. When they fail doing these four activities properly, they do. Have you heard of animals having heartbreak, a breakup relationship? No. But humans have. One boy came, I think last year, or he had come, and he was profusely crying, tears flowing from his eyes, and he was saying, I said, "What happened? Why are you crying like this? Did you see Krishna face to face?" When you see Krishna face to face, you'll get this Ananda Bashma. You'll cry in ecstasy. But then he was saying, "Prabhuji, वो छोड़ के चली गई. She left me." Okay, so human beings go through these pains. So the point that I'm trying to put forward is, when human beings do only these four activities of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, using all the intelligence, the higher intelligence that is given to them, they are very miserable. Then how are we special as compared to animals is a question now. We have to use this higher intelligence to do higher inquiry, first one, ability for higher inquiry. Second, human being always wants to remain blissful, happy. So yes, that's what is our eternal nature. We have to use our higher intelligence to find the higher permanent happiness. Third, higher intelligence is given to make a choice between two different options. Like today, you all had options. Sunday evening, you can do anything. But you have chosen to come to this course called Gita course and listen to the message of Bhagavad Gita. So that's a choice. Determination. D for determination. So the person, human beings have determination. When they have this higher intelligence, they can use that to have higher determination to do various activities. Like when it comes to spiritual activity, you need determination power to practice. Chanting 108 times sitting at one place, it needs determination. So human beings are special when it comes to these four activities. Ability for higher inquiry, A. B for bliss. You know, they search for higher bliss. Third, C for choice. They have choice to choose between what is good for me and what is bad. And fourth is determination, D for determination. So human beings have got intelligence to understand these aspects and inquire, no, why am I here? Why am I suffering? Why this? Why that? A person might not believe anything in Bhagavad Gita, but he will surely believe in karma. Surely, surely. Because you see, the karma aspect, no, how can we say, like for example, there's so many people, they're born poor, there's so many who are born rich, there's so many who are very fair and handsome and beautiful, there's so many who are black and ugly, there are so many who have got a good physique, there's so many who are like very fragile, there's so many who are born to rich parents, there's so many who are born to poor parents. Now the question is it by chance? Is it that God is tossing the coin and he's saying, you go there, you go here? No. See, there should be some logic behind it, isn't it? And that logic is karma. That logic is karma. And human beings, since they have got higher intelligence, karma is applicable to them and not for animals. Animals, they're just evolving and finally they will come to human form. And when they come to human form, then the rest of the things will proceed, right? So in this way, we understand that this human form of life is a very, very rare opportunity. Very rare opportunity. Why? This human form is like a junction. In this human form, since we have the opportunity to do karma, to do activities, good activities and bad activities, we can decide. So a person can either decide to go higher and higher in consciousness and break the cycle of birth and death, or the person can do nonsensical activities and go down and down and down into animal species, to hellish planets. This option is with the human beings. Only in human form this opportunity is given. Are you all understanding when we say that durlava manusha janma? When we say this durlava manusha janma, that manusha janma is durlava, ati durlava. Are we understanding why do we say this now? Because only human beings have got this opportunity to do karma, to do activities. When it comes to animals, they don't have intelligence, so there is no question of karma. They're programmed to do four activities: eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Small kids, they also, you see, whatever they put it in the mouth. Eating, that's what, eating, sleeping, that's what they keep doing all the time. But when it comes to matured human beings like us, we have got responsibility. So we cannot close our eyes and say, no, I don't know about all these things. No, you have to know. You have got this human form, so you have to know. There is no question of saying, I don't know. So it's the duty of everyone to read Bhagavad Gita and understand what is good karma and what is bad. This is very, very important, right? Now, after understanding all these things, after so much of bombardment, another question now that is there to answer now is, okay, so I understand that I'm a human being and you know, I have to do karma and it's human form is a junction, human life is a junction. I have to decide what I'm supposed to do. But now, Prabhuji, can you please tell us that how is the next body decided in human life? How? This is a very, very nice shloka from Bhagavad Gita. Please chant after me. Vasam sijirnani yatha vihaya Navani grannati naroparani तथा शरीरानि विहाय जीर्णानि अन्यानि सम्याति नवानि देहि. So this particular shloka, it says that like we put on the new clothes, giving up the old ones when the clothes become old. Similarly, the soul accepts a new body when this body becomes old and invalid. And I'm sure all of you remember this point when we discussed the Dehi Nosmin Yatha Dehe Varsh. You remember those different activities that we did? Different celebrities and their childhood photos and all that. So finally, at the time of death, the person switches to next life. So this is what we said, right? Now the question is, on what basis is the next body decided? On what basis is the next body decided? That's the question. Let's try to answer this question now. Let's take the example of clothes. Now suppose I go to a mall and I buy some clothes. So I like the jeans, I like the t-shirt or whatever. And then I take that to the counter. So now will I be allowed to just take like that, whatever clothes I chose? On what basis will I be allowed to take those clothes? On the basis of how heavy our account is, how heavy our wallet is, isn't it? The credits in our wallet will decide if I can take those clothes or not. Similarly, the next body is decided by the karma credits that we have. And we have two types of karma credits. One is called as the positive karma credits or good karma credits, which is called as punya. And there is something called as the negative karma credits, or which is called as papa. Depending on the papa and punya, the bodies are decided. The next body is decided. So there's a huge calculation. We cannot think also that how critical or how complicated the calculation is when it comes to the calculation of this material nature. So material nature, prakriti will award a person a body depending on the credits that the person has got, the past karma credits. So punya and papa, right? So now the question is, can you please tell us how many types of bodies we have? How many types of bodies we have? And there's a very beautiful shloka from Padma Puran, and this says this particular thing. Okay, the shloka has not come up properly due to some font change. Anyways, I'll read it for you all. Jalaja nava lakshani sthavara lakshavimshati kramayo rudra sankhyakaha pakshinam dashalakshanam trimsal laksha pashavah chatur lakshani manushah. So it is said, Jalaja nava lakshani. Jalaja. Jala means water, and ja means the one who takes birth in water. Jalaja, the ones who have taken birth in water. It means aquatics. How many aquatic species are there? 9 lakh aquatic species. Navalakshani. Sthavara. Sthavara means the ones who cannot move from their place. It means the non-moving living entities like trees and plants. How many they are? Laksha vimshati, 20 lakhs. Krimayo rudra sankhyakaha. Krimi means insects. How many types of insects are there? How many species of insects are there? Rudra sankhyakaha, 11 lakhs. Pakshinam, the birds. Pakshinam dashalakshanam. So there are 10 lakhs. And trimsal lakshani pashavaha. Four-legged animals. How many? 30 lakhs. Trimsal lakshani. And chatur lakshani manushaha. 4 lakh species of human beings. And all of that put together comes to 84 lakh species are available. It means 84 lakh different varieties of bodies are available. And depending on the person's karma of the past, either of the body is awarded by the prakriti to that particular person. Hope this is very, very clear. It should be very clear now. The soul does not transmigrate just to human body. The soul can transmigrate to animal body, bird's body, tree's body, and then insect's body, and even a worm in the stool. Even that is a body. Krimi, that is also an insect. Right? Now the question is, Chatur Lakshani Manusha? 4 lakh species of humans are. What do you mean by that? Yes. Depending on the consciousness level, the species are categorized. A person who has got very low consciousness, like for example, say aborigines, say tribal people. So their consciousness is low. They also behave like animals. and you know, some they wear clothes, sometimes they don't wear clothes. So basically, you know, we cannot categorize them in the, you know, in the category of civilized people, right? So their consciousness level is low, and they have more of fear in life, and they worship trees, and they worship the various natural calamities and so on and so forth. So they have a different, you know, thing altogether. Their consciousness level is low. Slowly, the consciousness level increases, and when the person becomes civilized, like for example, let me give the different levels also. So there's something called as Annamaya platform. So in Annamaya platform, the consciousness is only on eating. How can I maintain this body? Next is Pranamaya platform. The person starts understanding that yes, no, there is life. There is life. It's just not about this body. And there is something called as Jnana and Vijnana platform, where the person starts understanding the higher aspects of life. I am not this body, I am spirit soul. And finally, the highest level of consciousness is Anandamaya platform, where the person starts understanding that I am spirit soul, and there is a supreme spirit, God, and I've got a relationship with him. He is my master, I am his servant, and I have to serve him. This is the consciousness level, highest consciousness level, right? So in this way, depending on different consciousness level, people are categorized. So 4 lakh such species are there, depending on various categories, right? So this is the point. So depending on one's karma, I repeat, depending on one's karma, the papa and punya put together, what happens? The bodies are given. Various types of bodies. A person commits a lot of papa, he goes down into lower species of life. And lower species of life, it's terrible. Insect, birds, trees, they have to go through so much of pain. And when a person does higher activities, punya activities, you know, he goes higher. Even a person, a human being doing punya, he can become a devi devta also. That level also the person can reach. The person can become Indra, Chandra. They can go to that level as well. And when the person does bhakti activities, when the person does bhakti activities, that person can break the cycle of birth and death, this entire cycle of species. He can break the cycle and go to Vaikuntha, where karma does not apply at all. Yes? Where it's only Ananda. Vaikuntha. Kuntha means miseries. Vai means the place which does not have miseries. So that is breaking the cycle of birth and death. So this is a very, very important point to understand. Based on karma, we'll get these bodies. And human life is a junction. Only humans can decide. Animals cannot decide which body to get. Correct? They cannot do that. Only humans can decide which body I can choose. What should be my next destination? Okay? So this is one aspect. How do we get a body? Now, second aspect is, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, 8th chapter, shloka number 5, shloka number 6. So it goes like this. It says, where he says, Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajyatante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kaunteya sadatad bhava-bhavitah. So this is a very important concept to understand. Krishna is saying, please listen to this very carefully, very important. Krishna is saying, how is the next body decided? He says that whatever you remember at the time of death, based on that, the next body will be decided. And science has also proved that at the time of death, there is a rapid slideshow that happens in front of the person's eyes who is giving up the body. Rapid slideshow. And those slideshows are the different photos which this, no, very, very high megapixel cameras have clicked throughout the life. And one of the photos will remain in front of the person, and then the person will give up the body looking at that photo. And Krishna says that which photo is there at that point means whatever you remember at the time of death, you will become that in your next life. Very important. This is a very, very important thing. Very important. But then there is a small contradiction. Previously, I said that karma will decide your next body. Now we are saying that no, this whatever we remember at the time of death, that will decide our next body. You know, many times people say, see, there's so much of contradiction in the Shastra. No, we cannot refer to Shastra. So is there any contradiction? How will we understand this? No, like karma decides the next body, and our whatever you remember at the time of death, that decides the next body. How to understand this? Maybe I'll give you a case study, and you have to tell me. I'll open the chat box, and you have to tell me what will be the destination of the person. Okay. So the person's karma says that he should get a body of cockroach. Okay. Person's karma says he should get the body of a cockroach, and at the time of death, he was remembering a huge palace, huge, beautiful palace. So at the time of death, he has remembered a palace, and his karma says he has to be a cockroach. And I am opening the chat box here. Please tell me what will be the destination of the person. What will the destination of cockroach? What will the destination of the person? Amazing. Cockroach in that particular palace. It means you have understood the concept very nicely, very clearly. Yes, cockroach in that palace. Amazing. Okay, everyone is answering the same. So I'll stop the chat here. So yes, cockroach in the palace. So these two concepts are very, very important. What karma we do and what do we remember at the time of death. And if you properly analyze, both of them are linked. Both of them are linked. Now, in the next session, we will be continuing from this point. We have not yet discussed about what is good karma, what is bad karma, how can we understand this. And also, for your information, it's very, very clearly mentioned in Shastra that only when the karma of the person is zero, no good karma, no bad karma, only then the person can break the cycle of birth and death. But every single day we keep doing various activities. So any activity we do, either we get papa or punya, where is the question of zero activity? Where is the question of zero reactions? When we do a good activity, we get punya. When we do a bad activity, we get papa. Then what activities are we supposed to do, you know, to get no reaction? How can we do this? This is a discussion for next session. It's going to be extremely important. And purposely, I've divided this session into two because I wanted to cover it elaborately. In the next session, we're going to answer these questions. Why do bad things happen to good people? Very, very frequently asked question. Why do bad things happen to good people? Why I'm currently going through various situations, what I'm currently going through. And then there are various other questions which people ask related to these concepts. And we'll also see that how we can break the cycle of birth and death by doing what all activities, right? So with this, I would like to pause this session, and we would like to move now to the next part, that is the mantra meditation. After understanding all these things, what is the practical tip of the day? What is the practical tip of the day? So let's try to understand the practical tip of the day, which is very, very important. I'm sure you've already taken a practical tip by your own understanding. But as the course instructor, I'd like to put it forward. This is the practical tip of the day. Human life is a junction. Every single activity that we do in our life, we should choose it very properly. And we have got that capacity to choose. Why? Because we have got that intelligence. We have to choose very, very properly. And second, how will we understand which activities to do for going to higher destination? Bhagavad Gita will talk about that. And from Bhagavad Gita, we understand very, very clearly which activities to accept, which activities to do, right? So in this way, it's very, very clear that human life is a junction and it's not a time pass business. It's not a time pass business. We cannot just waste our time just like that. It's a very, very serious business that we have got in this human form. And the goal of this human form is to break the cycle of birth and death and not get into this all the time, again and again and again. Aren't we tired being in the cycle of birth, death, birth, death, birth, death, unending? We have become cockroaches in our past lives. We have become dogs and hogs in the past lives. We have become so many human beings in the past life. Again, why? Again, why? Why can't we break the cycle of birth and death this very lifetime? I would like to be a spoiler for the next session. And how can we break the cycle of birth and death? By practicing devotional service. by chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Very, very important. Very important. To be very frank, you know, we all are living a very a life which does not have higher pleasures. To be very frank, we don't have higher pleasures in life. All the ones who are attending the evening session from 8:15 to 8:45, we are singing a very, very beautiful song there. And that is the mood also, you know, when we are chanting. So today, you know, since we have got 5 minutes to discuss, I would like to tell you what should be the mood of chanting. And then we'll do mantra meditation with complete eagerness, focus and devotion. Please hear this carefully now. So when we are chanting, the mood is this. The mood of a birdlet who has fallen from the nest. Please imagine this. There is a nest on the tree and lots of eggs are given. Those eggs have been hatched and there are small, small birdlets in that nest. And one birdlet has fallen down when the mother has gone out to get some food. And now that birdlet cannot fly because it's still small, wings have not come out. Now the bird has come. The bird has come there. And this birdlet is looking up. And she has seen the mother has come. She has seen that. But she's not able to fly. The only thing that the birdlet can do is call out for the mother. Mother, I'm here. I'm here. I'm here. This is what the birdlet can do. That is what is our situation. We have fallen down in this material world and stuck in the cycle of birth and death. And when we are chanting, we are calling out for Krishna. Krishna, I'm here. Please help me. I'm stuck here. Please help me. Oh, Krishna, please help me. Please help me. Yes. And when we are chanting the holy names of the Lord, you know what happens? Krishna gets captured in our heart very easily. That's what Bilwa Mangal Thakur is saying in the last stanza of this particular song, Vraje Prasidam. He says, Karagrahe vasasadardaye madiye madbhakti pashadrida bandhana nishalasan tvam krishna he pralaya koti shatantarepe sarvasya chaurardayanahi mochayami. So this devotee who is writing the song, he's saying this particular thing that, oh Krishna, I have caught you in my heart by practicing bhakti. And by my bhakti, I've caught you inside my heart and I've tied you so tightly that you cannot escape from my heart. You're there in the prison of my heart forever. Aha, what a statement this is. What a statement. This needs that devotion to, you know, make the statement. Krishna, I've captured you. I'm not going to leave you now. This is a very, very beautiful thing. When a person chants the holy name, this is the mood that, oh Lord, when will that day come? When will that day come when you'll come inside my heart? When will that day come, you know, when I'll be able to attain you? Oh Lord, will I be suffering like this lifetime after lifetime, going through various species of life? Oh Lord, when will that day come? And this only a human being can do, and no one else, no one else, right? So with this, let's have this mood and let's call out for Krishna while chanting. A very, very amazing, auspicious month is going on, the month of Purushottam. So I request all of you all that let's chant, you know, very, very attentively, calling out for Krishna, that when will that day come, oh Krishna? No, when you will steal my heart, when will that day come? Now asking this question, calling out for help,